Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's nice to be back with you. The title of the talk is Healing from the Center of the Heart. I was talking with a client this afternoon, and she said to me, I've got things to talk about, but she said, I think I just need to name how profoundly disturbed I am by what's going on nationally and internationally. And we didn't linger over that issue, but it seemed fitting, appropriate to start the session in that way by naming that. I got an email from Eleanor, who comes and sits with us this afternoon, and she said, "May I ask a question? Do you know of any spiritual teacher who is talking openly about Trump and the threat of nuclear war? I know many who are talking, teaching about strategies for living right now, but none that are talking openly about the elephant in the living room. It feels to me like living in an alcoholic family where everyone is trying to cope, but no one of the spiritual set is talking openly about that there is an alcoholic in the family. I know many journalists and politicians and other leaders are, but I was wondering if you know of any spiritual teachers who are. I only know one, Sharon Bruce. Sharon Bruce is a rabbi in Los Angeles, really a remarkable teacher. But I'm sure there must be others. I find it hard to absorb the practices or message about how to live when the teacher doesn't address the context of danger and craziness. Of course, there are also many wonderful things about life, and it seems that most or many teachers say, focus on the good and live in the present. The scary stuff hasn't happened yet. But for me, at least, I find it hard to trust those teachers if they aren't addressing what's on the front page of every paper in the world. I was walking in my neighborhood the day after the election in the fall, and I came across John Surgent, my neighbor John Surgent. John was the chief of medicine at Vanderbilt. And John used to write a weekly column about healthcare matters in the Tennessean, and it was always such a learned, thoughtful piece. And some of you here in this space know John. And John was, when he was a student at Vanderbilt, was Lamar Alexander's roommate, and they were very much involved with the integration of the Vanderbilt student body during that time. And so I said to John, I said, "Well, John, how's your buddy Lamar doing?" And he said, "Well, I think Lamar is actually one of the saner ones up there right now." And I don't know if you heard, there was an audio interview with Lamar Alexander in the New York Times on Sunday. And it's about 20 minutes long, and it's really worth listening to. It's about his efforts to bring a bipartisan conversation about healthcare. And it's really, it is encouraging. So to come to Eleanor's question, do I know of any teachers who are addressing the present matters? And I don't know a lot. There is a Zen teacher. The Berkeley Zen Center has a teacher named Alan Sinalki, and he has a piece called Vowing Peace in an Age of War. And he reminded me of a story from the Buddha's life. The Buddha came from a country called Kapilavastu. And Kapilavastu was neighboring Magadha. And these two countries were about to go to war. The king of Magadha was about to invade the Buddha's country. And so the Buddha went and sat under a dead tree on the border. And he just sat. He was just meditating there. And the king of Magadha came and asked him why he was sitting underneath a dead tree. And the Buddha's response was, he said, even under a dead tree, I find shade and coolness when I am near my native country. And this statement so pierced the king of Magadha's heart when he felt into the Buddha's affection for his own people and his own country, that he withdrew his troops. But the story doesn't end there. The story ends badly, because one of the king of Magadha's attendant generals brought the troops back into war, and they came into the Buddha's country and they slaughtered many, many people. And the Buddha was heartsick about this. He was unable to stop the war. He failed at stopping the war. The great Japanese Zen master Dogen, probably the greatest of all Zen masters, said, "It is very hard to change the mind of a sentient being." And because it will not be possible to change the mind of the sentient being who is in the White House, I pray for the work of Robert Mueller every day. So I'll come back to the meat of my talk, and perhaps I'll be able to weave some of these considerations into the talk, but I hadn't planned to. So I want to begin by thanking Paloma for sitting in for me last week. I had some surgery on Tuesday, and I had some complications from that surgery. And I called Paloma to ask if she could come sit with me to see if I could kind of make it through the sitting. And she said, "You know, you really don't have to do this. Why don't you let me take this? I've got this." And I was so grateful to Paloma for doing that. She's just such a dear friend. But it turned out providential, because I told her that I wanted to talk about the Tibetan compassion practice of Tonglen. And you may not know this about Paloma, but Paloma grew up in a Tibetan Buddhist family. Her parents were early adopters of the teachings of Tibetan Buddhists in Northern California. And their teacher was Kalu Rinpoche. And if you wanted to try to find one of the most influential and greatest Tibetan teachers of the last century, it was Kalu Rinpoche. So Paloma really grew up breathing the air of this compassion practice of Tonglen. So I really couldn't have planned this better for Paloma to be giving the talk. I want to tell you about the genesis of this talk today. I was talking with a young mother, and she was telling me, and really quite sadly, about what she saw as her self-centeredness, her selfishness. And this is not the way that I experience this young mother at all. I see her as a devoted teacher and a devoted mother, and that she's kind of way down on the totem pole in terms of, about her own needs being attended to and being cared for. But her sense of herself is that she said, quote, "It's all about me. It seems like I'm just concerned with myself all the time." And I said to her, all of us have this sense that where I am is behind my face. See if that's not true for you. That where you live is behind your face, where you are, right? In this body, behind this face. And that is an expression of just the ordinary separation that we walk around in. That's ordinary self-consciousness or self-centeredness. It's just the way we're wired up. There may be some of us that seem more obviously self-centered than others. But this is a matter of degree. We all are self-centered. And so where is the healing, where is the antidote for self-centeredness? And I think we could think of spiritual practice, whether it comes in its Buddhist flavor or its Jewish mystical flavor or its Christian flavor, its Sufi flavor, whatever flavor, it's about dealing with this core issue of consciousness, which is self-centeredness. So what heals self-centeredness? In a word, it's compassion. And it starts with compassion for the pain of my own self-centeredness, my own self-preoccupation. Sometimes when I'm talking with clients about compassion, they say, well, I don't know, I just don't seem to be able to access it for myself. I mean, I can't find it. Where is it? And one analogy kind of works well for me. You know, if you accidentally hit your finger with a hammer, you know, what's the next thing that you do? You know, you cuss. And then your other hand naturally just reaches out and holds the hurt finger. You know, that's just, it's like reflex. It's just automatic. You know, when you see a child that's hurt, you know, just automatically, your compassion just goes out. And so it's often easier for us to feel compassion for someone else than we feel for ourselves. This is a very everyday, prosaic example, but I was playing basketball with my grandsons on Friday. And they're 9 and 10, but the 10-year-old has grown so much he's 40 pounds bigger than his 9-year-old brother. And so, I mean, they are just vicious to each other when they play sports. I mean, they are so competitive. And they are just giving each other what for. And the smaller one is just on the pavement most of the time. And, you know, as their grandfather, it's just, you know, it's just so natural for me to feel compassion actually for both of them. Both the one who's on the ground and who's crying, but also for the other one who's so competitive and really doesn't care about his younger brother right now. You know, in another, you know, 5 or 10 years it may be different, but right now he just doesn't care about his younger brother. That's okay. That's not a great failure of compassion on his part. That's just boys being boys. I can say this is one of three boys. So this business of compassion, it's often easier for us to find it for someone else than to find it for ourselves. But as Paloma was saying last week, it's very simple. It is a willingness to make contact with whatever is stuck, whatever is hurt. In ourselves, in somebody else, and to extend our caring as best we are able, according to our capacity. So as I begin to teach you a little bit more about Tonglen today, I really want to underline this phrase that Paloma used last week, according to our capacity. Because Tonglen should actually come with a warning label on it. And that is, if you are in a place of overwhelm in your life, this can be a challenging practice, and it needs to be calibrated for your use. The Tibetan teacher, Chogyam Trungpa, when he was teaching about Tonglen, this compassion practice, he said to his students, he said, I want you to imagine the great eastern sun, the sun that comes up in the morning. And he said, I want you to imagine it enthroned on your heart. He said, this is the great eastern sun of loving awareness, of awakening, bodhicitta, as the Tibetans call it, as Buddhists call it. It's the awakened mind heart. And what we want to do when we do compassion practice is first make contact with this awakened, warm mind heart that is in all of us already. It's not like something that we got to go out and find. It's actually there. And that's why I did the meditation with you this afternoon in the way that I did. I'm talking about actually making contact not just with the metaphorical heart, with the emotional heart, but with the physical heart space itself, with the inside center of the heart. I'm just curious, as best you are able, you know, I know this for some of you, this is probably the first time you've tried this. As we did this practice together, when you were, as you were able, able to find the center of your heart, for how many of you did it get quiet in the thought factory? Did it just get quiet a little bit? Yeah, so for a couple of you, you're nodding. It's like shooting free throws. It's an acquired skill, right? It's something that when you practice it, you get better at it. So I want to invite you, in your meditation to do grounding, do calm abiding with breathing into the lower abdomen, and then see if you can come into the clear seeing of the center of the heart space. That's where clear seeing, that's where vipassana, to use the Buddhist word, happens from. So let's start not with someone else's suffering or stuckness or difficulty, but let's start with our own. So think of this in terms of person A and person B. And person A is your awakened mind heart. It's the center of your heart. It's the place that is naturally responsive, warm, wishing the best for yourself and for all beings. And so we make contact with the center of our heart, or person A. And then we make contact with wherever we're stuck, where there's some recurring thing that comes into our consciousness. You know, it might be a work issue. It might be a physical issue, a physical pain, physical problem. It might be a relationship issue. It can be lots of different things. But what we want to do is make contact first with the warmth in the center of our own heart. And then just opening that warmth to this place of stuckness. And in the Tonglen practice, in the formal practice, what we do, and Tonglen rides on the breath. It rides on breathing. And so we breathe in that stuckness. We take it in to this warmth. It meets, if you will, our centeredness, our self-centeredness. And then on the out-breath, we send out all this light, all this warmth, all this caring, all this tenderness, all this soothing. And so Tonglen just rides on the breath. And I think it really helps, whether we do it for other people or not, we can do it for ourselves. Right? It is a way, one way, not the only way, but it is a way to send compassion to ourselves. So Tonglen, the Tibetan word, literally means sending compassion and taking in suffering. Sending out warmth, light, love, and taking in suffering. I want to read you what Pema Chodron has to say about this. Probably more than any single person in the Western world, it's been Pema Chodron who has brought Tonglen practice to our Western awareness. Here's what she says. So this is the basic Tonglen logic. When you feel discomfort, have the thought, other people feel this. Just like me. Other people feel this. And then if you want to take it a rather dramatic step further, you can say, may we all be free of this. You know, just like me. Someone else read the newspaper this morning. Someone else was horrified. Someone else was frightened. Someone else was appalled, just like me. And we breathe in that reaction. And we take it into the great spaciousness of this heart space, which has all the room for everything in the world, all the suffering in the world. But we start with my own horror. And I breathe that in, and then I breathe out this compassion. It's the healing nectar for everything. And if I want to, I might breathe in my client who I was talking with, the person who emailed me. I might breathe in their distress about this. I can do this right now. I can breathe in their distress. And when I'm willing to take their distress into my heart space, it melts my self-centeredness, because it's not just about little old me now. Now I'm taking in someone else's suffering. You don't have to, but you got the option. I take that in, and then I send out relief. So more from Pema Chodron. May we all be free of this. It's enough just to acknowledge that other people feel this pain. And the most dramatic and probably the most difficult step is to say, since I'm feeling this anyway, may I be feeling it so all others could be free of it. That's the logical end of Tonglen practice. The in-breath is, you find some place in your personal life or something you know about, you breathe in with the wish that those human beings or those mistreated animals or whoever it is, that they could be free of that suffering. And you breathe in with the longing to remove their suffering. I almost think of it as like sucking out poison from a rattlesnake bite. It's like, I'm going to suck the poison out of there. And then you send out, I often say, just relax out. I love those words, relax out. And send enough space so that people's hearts and minds feel big enough to be able to live with their discomfort, their fear, their anger, their despair, or their physical or mental anguish. But you can also breathe out for those who have no food and drink. You could breathe out food and drink. For those who are homeless, you could breathe out and send them shelter. For those who are suffering in any way, you could send out safety and comfort. So I'm going to break off from Pema at this point and just say, so you get how this works. When you start breathing this stuff in and taking this stuff in, it leads you to action. This is not just about meditation. It leads you to action, to doing something about it. There is this reciprocal energy that goes from meditation to action, back to meditation, back to action. If we don't do the meditation, we just get burned out with the action. But if we just do meditation, then we're just off in our little quietistic world. And we're really not connecting with the suffering of the world. And that's what the practice is about, is to be with the suffering of the world, our own and everyone else's. So more from Pema Chodron. So with the in-breath, you breathe in with the wish to take away the suffering, and you send out the wish to send comfort and happiness to the very same people or animals or nations or whatever it is you decide. So do this for an individual or do it for large areas, and if you have more than one subject in mind, that's fine. Breathe in again with the wish to relieve their suffering, and on the out-breath, sending them relief. And just breathing in deeply and breathing out, taking in as fully as you can, radiate out as widely as you can. So I love something that Paloma said last week, and she said, customize this. Do this in a way for you that works for you. In the classic Tibetan teaching, what you do is breathe in suffering as thick black smoke, and then you breathe out, kind of light. That really doesn't work for me. It just kind of chokes me up. So that imagery doesn't work for me. Paloma said you might breathe in, breathe in suffering, breathe out God's love. Breathe in cold, breathe out warmth. Whatever stuck, sending healing to that stuck place. Do this in a way that works for you. And let me say one thing about effort here. This is not something that works by trying harder. Very few things work better by trying harder. And you'll notice that when you're really efforting on something, there's a lot of racket in your brain. There's just a lot of noise. And that's why I really like this practice of coming into the center of the heart, because when you make contact with that place, the noise in your head gets quiet. And that's where you really interface with the spirit beings. That's the thin place that the Celts talk about, the Celtic folks talk about. That's the thin place right there, and it's in the center of your heart. So this last Thursday was the third anniversary of my wife Kathy's leaving her body, leaving this life. And I found myself drawn to looking over the stacks of cards and letters that people wrote us both before she died and after, to me, after she died. And I have not been able to look at these since her death. Only now have I felt strong enough to be able to encounter this. And I looked through about that much of it on Thursday. I saw cards from a number of you in here. And it just touched me so, so deeply. And I want to tell you about my experience with this. There was, of course, sorrow. But there were equal parts gratitude. Gratitude for Kathy's life. Gratitude for all the people who loved her so well. And for the people who took the time to write me and let me know. I have not answered one of these. I haven't had the internal wherewithal to answer these. My mother would be appalled at that. All right. But I think it's proper that I didn't try to write until I could. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. But I want to tell you how I practiced with this. So, there's the normal way of, here's sorrow, it comes up, and, it kind of comes and then it passes through. But what I did was hold this sorrow, breathe this sorrow into the great eastern sun, into the awakened heart. And I want to tell you, it was a completely different experience. And I don't have the words to tell you how it was a different experience. The only thing that I can say is, something mysterious happened. And it was a different way of being with this than I have ever been with it before. As near as I can articulate it, I think that I was bringing compassion to my own sorrow and not just letting the sorrow wash through me. And so it was different. And it felt healing in a different way. So I got thinking about Christian Tonglen. And I thought to myself, self, I wonder if somebody has written about Christian Tonglen, and so now you can just Google it. And lo and behold, you know, there are all these pieces about Christian Tonglen. Because it strikes me that Jesus was the Bodhisattva of the broken heart. That he really knew about taking the suffering of the world into his heart space. So I want to read you something that I came across. In reading the gospel accounts of the work of Jesus, what's clear is that he touched the lives of people who suffered. They suffered because of the pain in life, poor health, poverty, quite common things like failed love and relationships. In all these human situations, Jesus demonstrated compassion. He reached out in compassion, offered healing, comfort, kindness. The stories of the gospel convey a level of compassion that included being present with others in ordinary challenges, including the provision of tangible things like food for hungry crowds and wine for a wedding banquet. In each of these actions, Jesus took into himself the pain, the suffering, the disappointment, and the frustration. In return, he breathed out compassion, loving kindness, mercy, and healing. From a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, Jesus lived Tonglen. I love that. You know, in the resurrection appearances, one of the things that Jesus does when he comes to his disciples, he breathes on them. He says, "Receive the Holy Spirit." The Spirit, the presence, rides on the breath. The breath is the presence of the divine. It really is. I mean this literally. Your next in-breath is the divine presence. You're taking it in. And you're sending it out. You know, we have this language in the Christian tradition about Jesus taking away the sins of the world. And it really is, for me, just a pretty horrific notion that what Jesus is doing is paying some debt atonement sacrifice that the Father's anger had to be appeased. And so Jesus was the scapegoat and gave himself up so that we could be saved from our sins. That's not helpful to me at all. I find it appalling. But what really is helpful is this notion that what Jesus was doing in his daily life, and certainly most iconically in the crucifixion, was he was willing to breathe in. He had a big enough heart. He was willing to breathe in the suffering of the person that he encountered, the persons he encountered, and finally, the suffering of the whole world. He was willing to take that into himself. That's a large heart that is willing to do that. He did that. And he showed how hatred can be taken in and transformed mystically into forgiveness. That's his basic teaching. So he comes in the resurrection bearing peace and forgiveness in spite of all that he has suffered. I want to end tonight by doing what Paloma did. And that is just to invite you to look around at each other. Like, just turn, look at each other. Look at these other people who are sharing this space with us. And look around the room and realize that everyone in this space has their measure of joy and sorrow. No one is exempt. As Kathy used to say, we are all in this together. And look around inside now and find the center of your heart. Inside your heart. Find the center of your heart space. And see how as you look out from that space, how your gaze softens, how your heart warms, and how the spaciousness, the natural spaciousness of the awakened heart is there to take in whatever is here in your own life and in the lives of those around you. You may not know the particulars of those around you, but you know they're carrying whatever it is they're carrying, just like me. And we can breathe that in. We can breathe in each other's stuckness. And we can breathe out the wish that we all be free. And notice what happens to your heart, to your self-centeredness, when you breathe out the wish that everybody here be free. That's the magic of Tonglen. So let's end by first just appreciating the goodness of your efforts. The goodness of your efforts in doing the meditation today. The goodness of your effort in getting here. Just physically bringing yourself to the space. The goodness of your effort in listening to the talk. And appreciate the goodness of the efforts of everyone around you who, as best they can, is practicing with the stuff of their life. Appreciate the Sangha, the community around us, surrounding us. Just like me. Just like you. And so we send these wishes of loving kindness and compassion out to everyone. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be strong of heart. May we be at peace with ourselves and at peace with others. And may it be true for all beings without exception. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be strong of heart. May we be at peace with ourselves and at peace with others. We dedicate the merit of our practice this afternoon to the welfare of all beings, the arising of joy and happiness and compassion, and to the ending of suffering. So my good buddy Rami Shapiro and I will be leading another retreat at St. Mary's Sewanee on September 8th through 10th. And the retreat's going to be on loving kindness. Rami has a lovely book on loving kindness, and we'll be using his book and doing this practice, sitting and walking and learning about loving kindness, sharing silence, sharing conversation. Love to have you if you're free that weekend. Links are on our One River website and on the St. Mary's website as well. Thank you, as always, for your presence and your kind attention and your generosity, both in the baskets and back, and you can also give online as well. Have a lovely week. See you next week.